Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with modern-day trombonist Jason Jackson. On the heels of a spring 2015 Midwest tour, he took some time to talk to me about how his latest 2014 disc, Inspiration, is doing, what he has been up to these days, why he loves working on Broadway, his in-home studio, how he loves working with his wife in a duo, along with much, much more. Jason is another refreshing element of the American jazz scene that is pulsing with incredible music and cool cats. Dig it, my friends.
Hey, first of all, thank you for taking a little time out to talk with me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for interviewing me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I'm going to go ahead and dive right in. You kind of touched a little bit earlier on about this. So you just got off 3 weeks on the road. What's been going on with you as far as, you know, touring and promoting your latest CD? What's been going on?
Well, the most recent thing was a 2.5-week tour in the Midwest, based in Kansas City, mostly with Rob Sheps, who is kind of a resident. Two times a year, he goes to Kansas City and he brings artists from New York as guests. So we did some clinics and some concerts. We played at the Blue Room on 18th and Vine, which is kind of the premier jazz club in Kansas City. And we did a couple, we recorded two CDs and did a couple of my tunes and just basically played every night, you know, a couple of run outs to Nebraska City and Warrensburg, Missouri, I think.
Yeah.
So it was an action packed tour.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, that was the most recent thing in terms of promoting, you know, my CD and getting out and doing my thing.
Your 2014 CD Inspiration has been on my show and I love it. And I'm wondering, what have you been doing for promotion? How's the CD going? And just kind of talk to me a little bit about the album.
Okay. Well, for promotion, I hired Terry Hinte as a publicist and also Planet Arts Record as a radio promo to help with radio promo. And they kind of co-labeled my CD. And they've done really well at placing me in Downbeat and Jazz Is, a couple of nice feature articles and reviews, and a bunch of reviews around town. And I've gotten really great response from people who have actually listened to it and checked it out. But as you know, the market is flooded with, you know, brand new jazz CDs. So it's just a matter of, I guess what I feel like is this is my first real hard step in the direction of doing my own thing. And I feel like I need to just continue with this. My wife and I have actually a CD in the can that just needs to be mixed and we can put it out. And I plan on doing that in 2015 and kind of continue process, because I think that's really what makes a successful artist is just, you know, it's not just putting one great record out. It's putting a string of records out and continuing to try and promote your stuff. But I'm very happy with the people that have been playing it on the radio stations, mostly a lot of the college stations. And I got good placement on the Jazz Week charts. I think I got up to about 100 out of about 400. So that was pretty good. In terms of sales, I feel like nowadays people really just don't buy CDs anymore off, you know, so they get everything and they just kind of stream it. And one of the things that I've done with this record is I didn't go and put my record out on all the streaming sites. And so, you know, just to try to maximize, they say maximize your revenue. I just put it out on iTunes and then I sell the physical CD on my website. So that's it. So if somebody really wants my CD, they pretty much have to buy it, or they have to buy a CD and then they can pirate it. They actually have to buy it first, you know.
Right.
So instead of just putting it kind of out there, and you know, I'm happy with, like I said, this first step, and I'm hoping that as I put more records out, I'll have more sales, but. More about exposure, I think.
Sure. Speaking of your proverbial first steps, you were born and raised in San Bernardino, and your folks were really into jazz. Kind of talk to me about growing up in California, your parents' passion for jazz and how that really infused you to be who you are today?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, my mother raised me mostly as a single mom. So kudos to the very high percentage of single moms out there who every day go to work and raise their kids, because my mother did a better job than most parents that have two parents in their family. And I say that with pride, because she made sure I had my baseball and my music and all the things that little boys need to be exposed to. And she loved music. And she, when she grew up, her Uncle John was a saxophone player in Rochester and always rehearsed in the house. It was an old Italian family, so, you know, three generations lived in this, on the same block, and half of them in the same house. So they were always rehearsing, and her parents sang opera, and her uncle played jazz. And I just always grew up hearing music in the house and my mother singing to me. So it just was always kind of part of my heart. And then as I got introduced to the trombone through my uncle, he had one laying around, and I picked it up one day and tooted some notes on it when I was about 6 or 7 years old. And everybody said, "Oh my God, you know, this kid can already get a sound, and he hasn't even had a lesson or anything." So he just gave me the horn, and I started playing.
What I kind of want to do is I want to follow your lineage. In 93, you got your Bachelor of Music degree from Oberlin. What was that like to get into the classroom and to get a higher level of a music degree? What did you learn? What was kind of the formative lessons that you got at that point in your life?
Well, Oberlin was an incredible creative environment, and luckily I had training in high school. I went to an arts high school called Idyllwild School of Music and the Arts, and now it's called the Idyllwild Arts Academy. So I was kind of ahead in a lot of things like theory and music history, because we took those courses. But when I got there, I was surrounded by a level of musician that you can't really get at a local level. And that really inspired me. It just pushed me. I mean, I was here a freshman, and I had like, you know, 4 year and 5 year seniors that were just playing the trombone like incredibly in the classical department. In terms of the jazz department, I was kind of a big fish in a little pond, because there weren't any other jazz majors and not too many jazz trombone players. But Wendell Logan, who's a professor there, I studied composition with him. And basically, I think I learned so much, because it was a four-year period. It's hard for me to, like, pinpoint something. I mean, one of the opportunities I had was to get to study with J.J., which I kind of learned. It opened my mind up to, oh, you know what, there's really not one way to do anything, and I need to really kind of broaden my horizons in terms of the technique of playing the trombone, you know, because one of the questions I asked him is, man, you play so fast, so what do you do? Do you do doodle? Do you double? Do you, you know, how do you, and he's like, well, I practice all of that. And I was sitting there going, oh, okay, so it's, and it just kind of broadened my, you know, my idea of what it meant to play the trombone and improvise. And, you know, Wendell Logan was a great compositional teacher. He really emphasized form and always thinking about where you're going to with a melody. And I kind of always carried that with me. That was something that I really dug about him. And Wendell was kind of a no-nonsense teacher. He was there at Oberlin for years before they even let kids practice jazz in the practice rooms. He was there slowly building a program. And my first year there at Oberlin was the first year there was a major. Then I added the jazz major onto my classical major. So lots of really great experiences, but I guess those are some of the high points of what I learned.
Well, before we leave the formative years in your childhood, I want to know, when you were growing up, what did you want to be when you grew up? Was it music, or what was going on then?
Yeah, pretty much in the, was it like fifth grade or sixth grade, I knew I wanted to be a trombone player, like pretty shortly after I started playing it. You know, before that, I really don't remember. I you know, I probably wanted to be a fire truck driver, or and I also really always kind of wanted to be an astronaut. So, and I can't believe somebody printed this, but you know, it is true, but I just can't believe they printed it. But I did want to be the first trombone player in space. You know, it sounds kind of weird to talk about it now, you know, that I'm in my 40s, but that's how a child's mind thinks sometimes. Yeah, I'll just do this.
it paints a great visual. That's for sure. That is for sure. Yeah.
But I did understand that I couldn't. I think one of the things that the person didn't get was I actually understood that you needed to be inside of some sort of controlled environment in a spaceship. Like, I didn't literally mean floating around in space. And I think that's what somebody thought that I meant. But I actually knew you had to be inside, like, a spaceship or something, you know, to do that. So
some vestibule by which you would emit sound, yes.
Yes, yes.
So let's talk about, you finally decide that you're going to go to the Mecca of jazz in this world, New York. And what kind of shock, culture shock, was it for you to relocate from the West Coast to the East Coast, and specifically New York?
It was a culture shock in the sense that anybody who visits New York, I think they are shocked by just the sheer volume of people and cars and buildings. It's just 24/7, the city that never sleeps. I mean, you can't have that affect you. So, I mean, it was exciting at the time because I was young. Later, I moved out of the city, you know, about 7 years ago, because I'm like, okay, this is great, but I don't want to live. But it's just really exciting. I mean, that was a culture shock. I had never experienced that anywhere. But being at Oberlin prepared me for the weather, so that wasn't a shock, because I was at Oberlin for 4 years in Ohio, so I had been through serious blizzards and whatnot, but that was probably the biggest thing. Just cars whizzing by, honking, people, all kinds of people from all kinds of backgrounds, all in a very small place. It was exciting, but it definitely was a shock.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you come to New York City, there's two sides. You hit the ground running in an instructional level with the people that were teaching you, like Slide Hampton, Steve Turi, and Jack Gale. And then you really kind of hit the ground with performing with Ray Charles. Let me just get kind of your perspective. You're in New York City, you're young, and you're getting taught by cats that are so journeyed and so seasoned. What was that like for you?
You know, it was totally overwhelming, really. I mean, I look back on it now, and I think some older artists feel this way. They feel like they could have gone back and been taking lessons now, you know? It's like it was so overwhelming. Now, I practiced hard and I worked hard and I just really felt like I was in the right place. I really felt like I was doing the right thing. There's another aspect to it in terms of, it was a planned thing to study. You know, I could have come to New York and just tried to play, but I figured that, and I always recommend this to students, always try to get hooked up in the scene at the school, you know, in the area, because your teacher's going to be working around the city, your fellow students might be working around the city, and it automatically gives you kind of an inside track into the, you know, into working. Whereas opposed, if you just come out of nowhere and you don't really know anybody and you kind of have to go out and meet people and find everybody, I think it can be a little harder to establish yourself as, you know, as a working musician in an area than what I did. So I kind of planned on, okay, I'm going to go to school so part of why I went to school was really to meet people, you know, because I had a feeling that jazz, you can't really totally learn how to be an improviser and how to even play music in school. You know, I think that school can teach you some technical things and you can learn a lot, but mostly I think you can also get contacts and build kind of a reputation and have kind of a springboard into being a professional, certainly at the master's level, you know, And of course, private, because you can study privately with anybody. That in itself is probably the most important part. It's really just developing your technique and what you can do on the trombone with a private teacher. So, you know, and my experience might be unique because I went to Oberlin, and before that I went to a music high school. So a lot of the things that you might be taking classes for in master's, I kind of already did all that before I got there. You know, it was, I passed out of arranging. I passed out of the music history course, and I was just kind of straight on to, okay, now what, you know, you know,
well,
so that's where it was for me.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of, you know, where do we go from here? You toured the world with Ray Charles, lead trombonist in the Dizzy Gillespie All-Star Band. You gigged with Roy Hargrove and Charles Culver. I mean, it just seemed like your level of explosion between the classroom and the real world was probably a nirvana for you.
Well, it's been a great ride. You know, I just love doing what I do. I don't really think of it as, I just think of it as normal. Believe
yeah.
it or not. I mean, I just, you know, I've been grateful. It's not even normal, but really just grateful for the opportunities, because there are so many fine musicians out there and so many fine musicians, young musicians coming up too, that for every gig I have, I'm very, very thankful that I have it, you know? I don't know. I guess I don't really, it's kind of hard to have an opinion about your life, you know,
right.
to have like a, you know, but yeah, I feel blessed. I mean, what can I say?
Yeah. Well, another part of you is working on Broadway. What is it like to work on these productions that you've been on, like The Color Purple, Wonderful Town? Is it obvious? It seems like it would be a different flow from just going out and playing a show. I mean, what's it like to work on Broadway?
Well, you know, it's like having to put on another hat. You know, and I tell students this a lot. It really pays to be versatile. And it's the same kind of thing if I go play with an orchestra or a brass quintet, or I'm in the studio recording. You are under a whole another set of variables, and you because of the year, like when I first got on the scene, it was a quick learning curve. I had to figure out how to work with people. You're in a tight space. You've got people there that have been doing this for years. So you kind of have to ease in and really figure out, okay, what is my function? You know, how do I make everybody around me feel good and play well and play the charts? So it was mostly more just about figuring out the whole mind thing, like the psychological part of it. Because, you know, I could play the music because of my experience. And it turned out good. And my main introduction to Broadway was through one of my teachers at Manhattan School of Music, Jack Gale, who's a, you know, very, very well-known Broadway musician, and he's a composer and arranger as well. Done many, many years ago, he played with all the big bands, and he's just what a great encouragement. But he recommended me for a few things, and my colleague at the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra had me subbing on Catch years ago. So it was definitely different, but it's something I had experience in high school. I did productions of musicals, and it was something I enjoyed to do. You know, I always tell musicians, don't do it if you don't enjoy it. You know, some people just can't hang with it. I know plenty of musician friends of mine that play jazz that say, man, I could never do it. A gig in a pit, and I'm like, that's fine, you know, don't do it. You know, it's but I do it because I enjoy it. So it's some part of my musical upbringing. My mother was involved in musical theater when she was younger. So I don't know, something I've always enjoyed. And I married an 8-time Broadway performer. So
wow,
I must
there
have
you
something
go.
About it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So. And I'm going to get to that here in a second about that last statement.
Okay.
But first, before that, what's it like to be a part of the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra and playing in a hallowed jazz institution like the Village Vanguard?
Every night that I play, like tonight I'm going to go play with them, I am just in awe. I mean, from when I used to play those fad, some of those fad charts at Oberlin, like Cherry Juice, I just thought that this was the best big band writing I've ever had got to perform. And so when I moved to New York and they asked me to play the one night, I got a call around 6 or 7 for, I think it was 6 o'clock and like a 9 o'clock hit. I was like, yes, jumped right on it because I was like, oh yes, I'll get to play this music with the band. Little did I know how incredibly powerful and I don't know what words I can use to describe it that first night. I would say almost Nirvana. I mean, like you used that word before, but you're playing this, these charts with this band that some of these guys have been playing this music for 30 or 40 years. There's just nothing like it. I mean, they know the music inside out, and I just felt like, I felt like I was at home right away. You know, I just felt like, I like this. I want to be here. And they asked me to join the band the first night that I subbed. And I was like, yes, I will. Please, sign me up. But there's so many things about this band that I love. I mean, the ensemble is, I don't think, really matched in terms of how it swings, but also the way everybody just plays together. You know, and then you have the fact that there's world-class improvisers in every chair, you know, and the drummer, John Riley, just hands everything to the band because he knows what you're going to play before you play it. So he'll play something, you know, that just makes it impossible for you to not play what you're going to play, you know, because that's what a good big band drummer does, and it's kind of spoiled me, you know, because I really look for that in drummers, and not a lot of drummers have that sensibility of big band playing where you really set up the band, you know.
Yeah.
No, it's just such a wonderful thing. And then the bottom line is everybody's a family in that band. Like, everybody's very close. We all are friends outside of the off the band stand, and I'm just so honored and happy to be part of that family.
Speaking of family, you have a group you co-lead with your wife who, as you mentioned, is an accomplished vocalist. What is that like to work with your wife?
It's always been incredible. Our first project together was her first CD, If You Believe, and together we co-arranged 2 charts, Somewhere Over the Rainbow and Sound of Music. And she has ideas in her head. She's like, well, I'm kind of hearing this kind of thing. And then I put some jazz chords to it. And we just, it was a little, you know, bumpy trying to figure out, you know, how to for each of us to put our own thing on it. But when we work together, I think we come up with something better than if we did it on our own, both, you know. So that's how it's always been with my wife. And it's gotten better and better. And I'm just really proud of our group and our band. And Rosina is very, not only is she an incredible vocalist, but she writes beautiful melodies and words. And that's kind of how our team works. She writes the words and the melody, and I take it and arrange it and write the chords. And I think it's kind of the most intimate thing we can do together, really, in a way.
Yeah.
It's so much a part of who we were all of our life before we even knew each other, you know.
Yeah. So another aspect of your very multifaceted approach to life and music is that you have your own studio, Jack and Hill, in Jersey. Talk to me a little bit about your studio.
Well, my studio is our living room and our dining room and our office. we have a really nice upright piano, and my wife was so kind when I was trying to finish up my record to let me just basically move her out of the bottom floor, and I took over and ran a bunch of cables and, you know, put sheets on the wall to absorb the sound. So it's kind of really like a home kind of thing. I do have in my mind ideas to expand. I mean, now that our family is growing, and I want to have a real legit studio. But nowadays, most people who have studios they just have like a small room and a mic, and they do their overdubbing, and they use their synthesizers. So I feel comfortable. You know, I do have an office where I, you know, I have nice mics, and I can get, a part of my studio is sending, like a trombone track. Somebody needs a track on something, and I'll record it and email it to them. And, you know, it's just another way of making money. Or somebody wants to record a song, you know, just with a keyboard. I can do that, you know. But my record was done in my living room, you know, and in my dining room. I don't really, it's more for our purposes, for our recording purposes, not really bringing bands in, you know, and recording with. Although sure. When we have rehearsals, I record our rehearsals and study them and figure out, you know, what we need to change in the music. So that's the studio as it is right now.
Home is where the studio is. Very nice.
Yes.
So another facet, as we continue to add dimensions onto you, is that you're a teacher. What do you like to teach your students about jazz and about being a musician?
I like the fundamentals. I mean, I think to me, in the music education, a lot of teachers are so worried about getting that, winning that trophy at the jazz thing, and they drill the students on their pieces. But then you ask them, can you play, you know, a G-flat major scale? And they're like, no. And to me, one of the basics of improvising is really knowing your keys and your scales. I think anybody would know that. But it's more than just what I think. It's what was kind of laid down in the history, you know, just as we look back to learn how to take the music forward. All the musicians back in the day, they knew all their scales. You couldn't really perform unless you knew that real basic stuff. But it seems like we've got all these shortcuts nowadays, you know. And you know, that's kind of even the next level. The bottom level that I try with trombone students is really just developing their sound and their technique on the trombone. You know, being classically trained myself, very very attentive to playing etudes and long tones and scales, and just trying to develop just the technique on the trombone, you know. And then after that, listening to as many different styles of music as you want. I'm not opposed to anybody listening to anything, you know, from Roy Hargrove to Snarky, whatever that new band is. Snarky Puppy.
Yeah.
One of my students pulled that on me the other day. You know, I'm like, okay, that's fine. It's all good. It's just as long as people are into music. If you like it, go for it. You know, I'm just a very positive, just very open to that kind of thing. And then just have fun, play music.
So, right on. So you have played with Slide Hampton, Roy Hargrove, Dick Oates, Steve Wilson. The list goes on and on. Is there anyone out there that's playing these days that you're like, man, I would really like to get on stage with them and just gig with them? It would be great.
Oh, yeah, plenty of musicians. I mean, you know, Chick Corea, you know. The list goes on. Mark Turner. You just mean bands or musicians?
Yeah.
Or just kind of anything? I love Tane, you know, Jeff Watts. I love playing with great musicians no matter what it is. And having said that, it's not like I'm actively trying to go out and just gig with everybody, because I have a full plate in terms of who I am playing with. I love these musicians, and I would love to play with just about, you know, anybody on the scene. I just love playing music. Now that you ask the question, I could probably name 50 people that I'd love to play with. You know, it's not like I feel like there's one particular or two particular musicians I've got to play with them, you know.
Right.
I just got to play with them all.
Yeah, right.
It's like,
right on.
That's how I feel.
Right on. So, great answer.
Sonny Rollins.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock. I mean, geez, are you kidding? I did get to play with McCoy.
Cool.
You know, these I'd love to play with them. So,
yeah. Speaking of all these great musicians you just mentioned, was there like an album when you were growing up, a jazz album that you listened to that just blew your doors down, that really kind of opened your brain up to another level of seeing this world?
Yeah, I think one of the records was the J.J. Trombone Master record. I love that record. Freddie Hubbard and Woody Shaw, Kenny Garrett, Mulgrew Miller playing tunes like Pitter Pat, and I think Eternal Triangle was on it. But this record was really great to me because I really got into Woody Shaw. I was young. I was in maybe early high school, and just trying to play like Woody Shaw solo, just thinking this is the coolest thing. And then a record that Carl Fontana and Bill Watchers recorded together where they played a tune called Hey There. And they do a bunch of duets. And I transcribed all the duets, and I used to play it with the other trombone players in my intermediate school band, try to recreate that thing. But I was just really into that stuff and transcribing things like Star Wars. I remember my mom always tells a story that I was transcribing Star Wars, and once I brought her like the sheet music to Star Wars, she thought, oh my God, this kid's going to be a musician. You know, that's where she felt like, oh well, so much for a doctor. You know, he's definitely doing this.
Yeah, but, that's great.
Got to go.
Wow, that's cool. So, tell me, what's the greatest thing about waking up every day?
I'm definitely just thankful to be alive and have my baby girl and my wife and I'm breathing, and I'm thankful to be here and around. Doesn't take much for me, and then to be able to play my horn. When I look into my baby girl's face, it's all good.
Let's say you leave the Village Vanguard one night, and it's late, and there's a DeLorean sitting out front. You can go into it, and you can punch in the coordinates to watch any jazz show in history. What jazz show would you go watch?
Oh, God. Didn't Nat King Cole have a show?
Yeah.
He did. I think that would be a really cool show to watch. Thank you.
Yeah.
But you can watch all that stuff on YouTube anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's really nothing that you can't watch. But, yeah, sometimes I go back and look at those old shows.
Yeah.
I would say that would be one big one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Nat King Cole.
Yeah, he's good. So what's next for you?
What's next? Well, getting the CD done with my wife, continuing to try to promote this one and do some gigs with my own group. Some more gigs this year with the Dizzy Big Band. We're going to play the Hollywood Bowl. We're doing the Blue Note. I want to write some more music. I'm starting to get my charts up on my website. So in case some of the school bands might want to use them. And I'd like to do some more arrangements. Having done all the Wayne Shorter music in Kansas City, I'm really thinking of expanding that to a larger nonet side, because I play with a nonet here and doing some of those, the music from Schizophrenia and Soothsayer, arranging it for like nine, and teaching more and just practicing hard.
Right on. So we're going to bring everything down to one very simple yet very impactful question that I have for you. Why is the jazz trombone such a cool instrument?
Well, it's because I think it's close to the voice. And I think that when I'm playing it, I try to sing. And I think that for me, it's the most expressive instrument that I can think of doing what's in your heart to sing out on, you know, short of singing with your voice. For me, it's an incredibly expressive instrument, versatile, and now nowadays limitless technique wise.
that's the perfect way to put a kind of a period on the end of things. Thank you for your time. Continued success. I appreciate you taking a little time out for me today.
I appreciate you giving your time as well. Thank you.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to the great Jason Jackson for his superiority over the trombone and the music he gives us. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino on the iTunes Store or visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.